Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, Executive Editor for SearchCIOMidMarket.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on SOA and Web Services, What CIOs Need to Know. I'm joined today by Ann Thomas-Maines, Vice President and Research Director for Burton Group Application Platform Strategies. At Burton Group, she covers service-oriented architecture, SOA, cloud computing, web services, XML, governance, Java, application servers, super platforms, and application security. Prior to joining Burton Group, Ann was former Chief Technology Officer at Systinet, a SOA governance vendor, now part of HP, and Director of Market Innovation in Sun Microsystems Software Group. With 30 years of experience, Ann was named one of the 50 most powerful people in networking 2002 by Network World and among the Power 100 IT leaders by Enterprise Systems Journal. Ann has authored Web Services, A Manager's Guide, published by Addison Wesley, 2003, and participated in Web Services standards development efforts at W3C, Oasis, WSI, and JCP. Welcome, Ann.
Hello, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're here today to talk about what you need to know about SOA and web services. I'll spend the next 8-plus minutes asking Ann to answer a number of questions about today's topic. So let's get started. My first question today is, can you first give us an overview of web services and SOA and why each of them are important to mid-market companies?
Okay. So web services is essentially a middleware framework that people use to integrate application systems. And when web services first came out, it was just simply this middleware system, but it was a new one and it was exciting and it was much better than a lot of the other middleware systems that were out there because it enabled heterogeneous systems to communicate because it was based on XML. As people started playing with this thing called services, though, they started thinking in a more grander scale of how to actually architect systems, and that's where service-oriented architecture came into play. Service-oriented architecture is an approach to designing system. It's called an architectural style, which means that it's a discipline and a way of thinking about problems and a way to go about designing your systems. And the primary goal of SOA is to increase your agility, make your systems easier to manage and maintain, and enable a lot more fluidity among your systems, you know, enable you to reach out and do e-commerce and things like that. And they're very important to the mid-market companies. Well, number one, web services has become pretty much the standard way for business-to-business integration these days. Instead of using very expensive EDI-type systems, you're going to use web services to enable your systems to communicate with your partners or suppliers or customers. But you also want to apply these SOA design principles to the way you build your systems so that you actually can expose your capabilities more easily so that people can get to them, and also to ensure that your systems are a little bit more amenable to the changes that are inherent in your industry.
So are they always used together, SOA and web services?
No, not always. I think that a lot of people who have been doing service-oriented architecture by default use web services as the middleware to enable their services to communicate. But in fact, when you're building a service, what you really want to do is make sure that the service can be consumed through whatever means the consumer wants to consume it. And so in some cases, that interface should be a programmatic interface. And in that case, you want to make it a web service. Web services is a programmatic type of interface. But you also want to make sure that it's more accessible for the web. And there's this new model of application development out there called mashups, where you can basically just go grab things off the web through URLs and mash them together and create these cool little new applications, situational applications that support your specific needs. And so if you want to make this information or this capability that's implemented in the service accessible to someone who's trying to do a mashup, you don't want to only support a web services interface, and you also want to support a web interface. You know, essentially, you'll click on this URL and you'll get information back. And so that's really the type of interface you're looking for there. And actually, in other cases, you may want to make this capability available through an automated process, which is just somebody's going to send a message, put it onto a queue, and then you want your service to be able to grab it off there and run. So therefore, services will support a number of different types of interfaces. They don't only support web service interface.
Okay, and are mid-market companies using SOA mainly for application integration, and why or why not?
SOA and application integration are different things. As I said before, SOA is a way about thinking about designing your system so that they're more agile, they're more amenable to change. You can use web services to do integration, and anything that you create with a service interface is more easily integratable with other things. But I want to differentiate SOA and application integration. With application integration, you have two separate applications, and what you're trying to do is build a bridge between them. And in order to build a bridge, what you have to do is build huge support structures, and what you wind up doing is actually reinforcing the application silos that you have in place. When you're doing service orientation, what you actually are trying to do is break down those silos. And so often what you'll do is take an existing application and break out certain capabilities from the application which need to be shared by other things. And so you are, in fact, re-architecting the application rather than just integrating application silos.
And let's talk about governance. Why is SOA governance so important to your SOA initiatives?
Well, I think that the biggest challenge that most organizations have when it comes to doing SOA is overcoming a lot of cultural impediments, because SOA requires a certain amount of collaboration. If you actually want to build a service that many different organizations may wind up using, so let's say, for example, you want to create a shipping service, and you might have multiple groups within your organization that ship, or you want to manage accounts, and you've got a bunch of different business units that manage accounts. Well, why do you have to have a separate account management application for each of your business units? You want to have a single account management application that all your business units will share. Well, now all of a sudden you've got to get all those business units to start collaborating together to decide, well, what does this application, what does this account management system look like? And that's by far the most challenging aspect, and that's the thing that gets in the way for most organizations, because it changes your funding model, it changes your organizational model, you often have to change incentive systems and things like that. And the only way to really do that is by putting some governance in place that kind of directs people and says, yeah, here's the way we want you to do it, and here's some guidance to help you do it the right way, and here's some incentives that will actually make you do it the right way, and those kind of things. So that's really your focus of the governance program. The governance program will facilitate people doing things the right way. Not that they necessarily want to do it the wrong way, but they may not know how, or they may have incentive systems in place that really prevent them from doing it the right way.
Okay, and finally, I wanted to talk about cost. Do you think mid-market companies can realize cost savings and ROI in investments in both SOA and web services?
Well, that's been one of the biggest challenges in a lot of SOA initiatives. People have spent a huge amount of money putting in all kinds of infrastructure that they didn't really need in order to start adopting SOA design principles. And a lot of that was because the vendors seemed to think that, well, if you want to do this, you have to build out all this infrastructure. And it's really not necessary. You can actually build services, whether they're exposing web service interfaces or other types of service interfaces, without building out a huge infrastructure. And as long as you think of it from that perspective, if you think of it from the architectural perspective as opposed to the technology and the infrastructure perspective, then you can actually start doing SOA for relatively little money. And at that point, you'll actually start realizing pretty decent cost savings within a very short period of time. If, on the other hand, you think, oh, I've got to go out and buy all this infrastructure first before I can get anything, then at that point, your infrastructure investment winds up costing seven figures, and it takes a long time to recoup that investment. So you just need to be really careful and not go overboard by going out and buying a lot of products in order to make it work.
Okay. And on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. Thanks again to Ann Thomas-Maines for speaking with us today. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.